And I said last week, the Browns had a chance to do the funniest thing, which was after the Deshaun injury, after the fans in the locker room clearly having their issues, Shelby Harris on We're the Harris's saying that that Browns fans lost the locker room and they lost players. They had a chance to do the funniest thing possible, which is go out there at home and beat Baltimore. And then lo and behold, they went out there and did the funniest thing possible, which is go out at home and beat Baltimore. So we got a lot to get into today. I don't know. Nick Wilson, Afternoon Drive. Hi, how are you? Happy Browns Monday. It's a Browns victory Monday. We got Macaroni Baloney, Mac Robinson on the board. We got Meredith Kane behind the glass. And then we got JP on the 2020s. He'll join me as co-host coming up in 2 hours' time. But if you listen just faintly in the distance, you can hear the reverberations of the door slamming on Deshaun Watson's time in Cleveland. Because the whole point of this week was we're going to find out how much of it was about Deshaun Watson and where he was in his career. And listen, there were signs, right? Once you get past September, there's only so much you can explain away about bad performance. And listen, I still think it's a little too easy to put everything on why the Browns are now 2-6, even with this win in Baltimore, which looked as much fun as we could possibly have dreamed it up going into it on Friday's show. We kind of thought, well, I don't know if it's going to end in a different result, but it's going to look better. It's going to look more fun. And that is exactly how it happened. But I don't know it's as simple as every single thing going for the Cleveland Browns and going against them was Deshaun Watson's fault. But I think you saw a team with a renewed spirit, a renewed energy, and you just can't deny the difference in the circumstances. And while it might be more than just, well, you swapped out Deshaun for Jameis, I'll be honest with you guys, how I watched that game on Sunday, I watched it with a different energy than I've watched any of the previous games that I've seen with Deshaun Watson. And this is where it's not really about Deshaun Watson. It's about the trade. It's about the contract. It's about the embarrassment at whiffing so incredibly hard at this trade. And for the Browns organization to bring this pox upon us and having to deal with it and having to deal with the, whether it's the moral ambiguity of it, having to deal with the questions we asked ourselves. Are we still Browns fans? And then them not having the common decency to make the trade work out. All those things put together, and all of a sudden, you have this unbearable pressure. And so I watched yesterday with no pressure. A little bit of it's just because they're 1-6 and I had no expectations for them. And the other part of it is I didn't have to have expectations. The playoffs, as of right now, yes, even right now, are far-fetched. Oh, not even just the playoffs, but we're talking about the future of guys. We've had people start talking about names like Shador Sanders and the kid from Medina, from Penn State, and all the different kids we're seeing. Carson Beck from Georgia. All the kids we're seeing in college. Because of the albatross that is Deshaun Watson's contract, it's very unlikely you're going to be able to go out there and get a veteran. And if you do, it's probably going to be a discounted veteran. You didn't have to have that yesterday. Yesterday was just bringing it back to football. And that doesn't mean, again, it doesn't mean that, it doesn't really mean anything about Deshaun. It doesn't. It means something more about the Cleveland Browns. I thought it was interesting because I just think as you've had enough evidence, yes, the Browns won games with Deshaun. At least last year, they won games with Deshaun, even when Deshaun was hurt. But I think if you look at the offensive production, which is yardage put out there, which is, you know, sustainable drives, it's night and day. And what's so perfect about this is, and I've said this a couple times, Jameis is like discount Flacco. Like, they are the same kind of quarterback. They're big, mostly pocket-based quarterbacks with a little bit of giddy-up to get out of situations if you need to, but they're not going to run around for their life, and they're just going to try and throw the ball down the field at every opportunity they got. And guys, there were quite a few interceptable balls yesterday, but it doesn't matter because they weren't intercepted, right? Chiefs fans, and this, I'm not making this literal comparison, but I'm simply saying Chiefs fans do not care about any of the almost interceptions with Pat Mahomes as long as they win, and as long as more often than not they're not interceptable, they're not intercepted. Doesn't matter if they're interceptable if they're not intercepted. Yesterday was also proof that the Browns lied about who gave them the best chance to win for seven straight weeks. And again, that's less of an indictment, or sorry, it's less of an endorsement on Jameis and more of an indictment on where Deshaun was physically and mentally. And what's funny about that is you knew that. And I still saw people, especially in Cleveland media, oh, it just proves they lied. Yes, we knew they were lying when they did it. You can't, like, post hoc, and I'm saying that because we had a caller last week use the phrase post hoc, and I'm now addicted to it. But you can't, after the, when you knew the whole time that they were lying, that Deshaun gave you the best chance to win. And then, at the very end of the rainbow, the lie was proven to be the biggest lie in the world. You can't then get, like, retroactively mad at them when you were pissed the whole time. It was obvious that Deshaun didn't give you a chance to win. That was probably obvious, honestly. It was obvious in a certain game, but, like, specifically Washington, where you just got run off the field by a rookie quarterback. So I don't care that they lied, because the reasons why they lied, they knew they were lying too. They had no choice but to put Deshaun out there on the field, and Deshaun's injury, it sound, freed them. It freed them from their obligation to the financial responsibility that had tethered this thing to the damn ground. And I'll be honest with you, I think it's incredibly dangerous to go ahead and start applying a lot of meaning to one win. Because until proven otherwise, that's what yesterday was. One win. But don't let that stop you from savoring every minute. You beat Baltimore. That in and of itself is a erotic experience anytime you get to go ahead and beat Baltimore. How you beat them, which is you were trailing at the half and you kind of came alive, and then your defense really did a number on Lamar. And I know, like, Lamar had a chance to win that game with being able to throw into the end zone at the end of the game. Outside of the Jaden Daniels thing, those plays, like, work 1% of the time. So even that, yes, Baltimore had a credible threat of winning that game. The Browns were going to win that game. And it's so weird that a team is 1-6, that late in that game, I had no doubt that they were going to win that game. So yesterday was proof that they lied about who gave them the best chance to win. It was the door slamming on Deshaun Watson's time in Cleveland. If it already wasn't sealed shut, it's certainly now completely sealed shut. And yesterday was also proof that this roster isn't that far off, right? Cedric Tillman and Jerry Jeudy. Turns out they don't suck as much as you thought. Hell, even Elijah Moore got in on the action. David Njoku looked the most alive David Njoku's looked from the last six or seven regular season games of last season. DeJuan Jones looks like a left tackle who can play through the whistle. I was told that that didn't exist. I was told that if they had a better option on the roster, they would have gone to it. Well, people have been shouting about DeJuan Jones as left tackle as far back as January. All of a sudden, that sure feels vindicated. Oh, the defense looked pretty good despite losing JOK in a very scary situation. And again, hope I think it seems like he's okay, but hopefully he's more than okay. And despite losing Denzel Ward to his sixth concussion, which is a whole nother scary conversation. And listen, yesterday also might not be proof that this team is ready for a playoff run. Excuse me. Those words sound sane. But, like, Jameis was playing for the first time. There's now tape on him, right? In this context, against a good defense, they were without their best corners by a wide margin. One of their best safeties wasn't playing in Marcus Williams for some reason that we don't know, some sort of issue behind the scenes, and the Browns sure exploited that. But yesterday doesn't have to be about anything more than good God, that was fun. Good God, there was no pressure yesterday. And it also can just be about a great tribute to somebody that we lost as Clevelanders in Jimmy Donovan. And it's so funny, man. I've heard a lot of people talk about Jim as the professional, which is totally makes sense because he is synonymous with Browns football. And I'm sure that is such an honor to be synonymous. I mean, the Browns going after the game and taking the game ball to his widow and his daughter, that was really great stuff. And again, proof that the Browns organization can get the little stuff right and can prove that this is an honor to represent Browns football instead of what sometimes else it feels like whenever you get anybody new in town. But the first people I thought of were his widow, were his daughter. And here's the other thing. Like, I don't seek out mentor relationships in this business. And that's not anything against anybody. It's just who I am. I kind of think this business can be a little insidious and ego-based. So I pretty much do my show, and then I go home to Wadsworth and try and soak up as much time with my family as possible. So my relationship with Jim was not the relationship it was with other people, because I never really sought it out. But every time I saw Jim and Berea and said hi, there was a great big smile and a wave, and how are you doing? How's your family doing? Everybody asks how you're doing. Nobody asks how your family's doing. And the other thing is, Jim was the voice of the Cleveland Browns to me. And when I lived in Dayton, and I was not happy that I was living in Dayton because I was in middle school and I missed my friends in Wadsworth because we had just moved and I missed my family. Those drives to and from Dayton on Sundays, Jim and Doug Deacon made it made sense when the Browns weren't good. When the Browns were, honestly, they got way more Brownsian later in the time there, but where it felt like every moment we had hope, there was something missing. And Jim did something that a lot of broadcasters don't do. He was honest about it. And he was honest about it in a way that was respectful to the team, respectful to the coaching staff, while also letting you know what was really going on. So he was really good at his job. And he was really good at speaking for Browns fans, who really at points in this last 25, 26-year debacle have felt voiceless. And so just to sum up the big picture, like, I don't know it's possible to sum up somebody who you knew from one lane when he was more than just the voice of the Cleveland Browns. But yesterday's win, it was hard not to feel like that was for Jim. And the universe does not give you a lot of moments like that. So to have that happen for Browns fans, for his family, for his Browns family, I just think that's why you keep coming back for sports. That's the thing. Amidst all the disappointment, all the bickering, all the arguing, moments like that, the loss of somebody that everybody here truly treasured into a team winning a game no one really thought they were going to win. And a win that would have meant something to him. Man, that's why you sports, right? That's what keeps, that is the addictive drug that keeps us coming back in spite of our good senses. 216-474-0092. Nathan Zagura, his old broadcasting partner, he was on the call yesterday. A lot of really great emotions and stories from him. We're going to talk with Nathan at 3 today. I do want to know what would have happened if they had lost that game, because Nathan was full of emotion. I want to know if he would have risked it. If they had lost that in traditional Browns fashion, would he have thrown it all away just to mother bleep this team? I'm kidding. Sort of. Nathan at 3. We've got Daryl at 6. JP's going to join us here. But I am curious, how much did yesterday change things for the Browns? Because I think there is a danger in looking for too much change. The Browns did the change. They swapped out the quarterback. Wasn't their choice, but they finally swapped out the quarterback. They did have a choice on who was going to be their signal caller. All right, so they swapped that out. They finally swapped out the left tackle, which some of us have been begging for a little bit, and we will get into at some point whether someone got Wally pipped yesterday, and we're going to do it as respectfully as we possibly can for a guy that, quite frankly, much like other people, did not endear himself all that much. But I will continue to go back to this. Let yesterday be what I think it was, which was potentially the first building block of Browns football being fun again. Like, so much of the previous 7 games was you didn't trust them. Whether that was you didn't trust Kevin, whether that was you didn't trust Andrew, whether it just all boiled down to you didn't like or trust Deshaun Watson. Am I certain that yesterday leads to a playoff run? No, I'm not even close to there. Do I know definitively that it should change the Browns' course of action coming up at the deadline? No, and I think saying anything to the contrary would probably be pretty overreactionary and just in the moment emotion, which I understand, but probably shouldn't dictate where the Browns are. But yesterday was about Browns football getting back to being fun, getting back to being, I don't listen, it'll never be carefree because we all care too damn much, but it was about getting back to being who you've been when this team wins under Stefanski and Barry. That's how the offense is supposed to look. That's how the defense is supposed to look. That's how they're supposed to play at home. So the next barriers or the next things to overcome are, can you do it twice? Because this team hasn't been consistent. The next things are, okay, can you do it on the road? Because that was a bugaboo last year. All right, the next thing is, can Jameis play this into an extended run? And I think that's actually the biggest question. I think free from the pressure of Deshaun, I think the energy is going to look a little bit more consistent from week to week, guys. I just think that's kind of common sense, right? I do think when it comes to the road, I think that's going to be hit or miss regardless because you are trying to get out of a hole. I think Jameis is the biggest piece. And I tend to think when a guy's got 100-plus games in the NFL that you're going to live and die by the way he plays. And a couple teams have lived and died by the way Jameis has played. But for at least one game, it was pressure-free, it was fun, and it was double deuces to a Ravens team that you just can't hit with birds enough, right? There's left and right, and then maybe a couple extra hands of left and right of free birds from Cleveland Browns fans to those dirty birds out in Baltimore. 216-474-0092. And Nick Wilson says social media reactions on X. Powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. How much did yesterday change things for you when it comes to the Browns? We'll get into that. And the idea of watchability in the Cleveland Browns on 92.3 The Fan. It did feel like a different team. The self-inflicted wounds were, for the most part, gone away. Although, again, many interceptions left on the field yesterday. All right? That doesn't happen that way too many times. I'm not here to tell you that that's all Jameis. All right? There were a couple times where I think they were maybe a miscommunication, but like the Kyle Hamilton throw. Guys, just a bad throw. A worse non-play. I mean, honestly, if you're Kyle Hamilton, what the hell, bro? Like, I hate whenever you like criticize a defensive back for not making interception. They're like, that's why they're defensive backs. If it's thrown right to you, you should catch it. I don't think that's a hot take, by the way. Like, if you have to stretch out and make a play and it's, you know, a foot above you, hey, you just try real hard, little buckaroo, right? But if it is thrown, if it hits you when the hands are in the face, I'm sorry, you're a chotch. There's just no other way to put it. Now, that being said, I think the way I'm going to put it with Jameis, because I think this is really crucially important. I know today Kevin Stefanski said Jameis is the starter. And I think he is, until he isn't. I think Jameis has another probably couple weeks now. I'll be honest with you. I think he probably has the Chargers game because you have the bye after this. That'd be a logical place to go to DTR if you wanted to go to DTR. But I digress. Jameis just made them watchable yesterday. And even when the interceptions come, and guys, they will, right? Joe Flacco, when the interceptions came with Joe Flacco, because that's who Joe Flacco was. He is a gunslinger. He is a guy that tries to trust his arm, throws into double coverage, throws when he shouldn't. And we saw some of that with Jameis yesterday, too. So in terms of winnability with Jameis, I need to see more. And I think you should, too. This gets back to the question of how much did yesterday change for you when it came to the Browns? I'm in no way convinced that we're about to rattle off five straight wins and get to 6-6. But that would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That means by December 15th against the Chiefs, you're playing to get above 500 if they won every game from here till then. So the road still is incredibly uphill. And I think the most likely scenario if Jameis plays the rest of the season is probably 8-9. Well, actually, no, that's not the most likely scenario. The most likely scenario is you get enough wins to be out of position to go and take the quarterback of the future. That's not something we should care about today, but it is something we'll care about. The Lovie Smith effect in early January when we're like, oh, they got the 14th pick. There's not a shot in hell we're going to draft a quarterback, at least not like the best quarterback, but I digress. I do think, and this is something that I said last week, I think Jameis is going to make it more entertaining. And unfortunately with Deshaun, the Browns were a lot of things that just were unpalatable. They weren't fun to watch. They didn't have a good energy, as you heard Ross Tucker talk about the energy on that on CBS, right? And on the call we just played, they weren't incredibly likable, right? So you're not fun to watch. You're not likable. Oh, there's immense pressure every... I think that's... Like, when we tell this to our kids about the bleep show that was the Deshaun trade and the contract, let's remember that every throw was graded with the severity and weight of, like, a Super Bowl pass. That's how toxic it got to the end. So, am I certain that Jameis is going to lead you out of the abyss? Nope, don't have to be. That's something that will unveil itself for the next couple weeks. Am I certain that Jameis isn't going to at some point annoy the living daylights out of everybody with the way that he handles pre and post game in his press conferences? I cannot tell you that either. That'll be based, as is everything else, on wins and losses. But do I think that the pressure is gone and that the football is going to look more fun even if it leads to losses? Yep, that's enough for me today. I'd love it if I could. At one point, we're going to have to get into the conversation about, do the roads lead back to the playoffs? Today, Browns football is fun again. Winning, and here's the other thing, they're going to compete. I didn't know, like, we got to think of how bleak it is when you can't trust the offense or the team to compete. In game, you're like, eh, it's not going to happen. That's how bleak things were. Even in that Cincinnati game, which was wildly winnable, and now they look even dumber for not having Jameis as the backup, because if Jameis is the backup in that game right now, you're 3-5, and we are talking playoffs because we're just high on the hog. I don't even know what that means. It just sounded right. That dog will hunt or won't hunt. One of those two things. Someone get Chris Renan in line. But yes, it makes the DTR thing look even dumber 2 weeks ago, but for now, that's not the conversation. For now, the conversation is, oh, we can exhale, and we can root for the Browns again, and Sunday at the stadium feels good again. It's not where we want to be, but it's better than where they were. 216-474-0092. Should you keep Jameis? And you know what? I'm going to hold on to that, because I was going to go trade deadline with that. I'm not doing that. We'll throw that in when JP takes over as my co-host in about an hour and a half time. However, the question is, how much did yesterday change things for you with the Browns? Let's go with Tim in Cleveland. What's up, buddy? Timothy? Tim? Man, I was really excited for Tim because he had the byline there was really, really nice. Was that on you? Are you doing this right? You screwed up, Mac. You'll become the new Deshaun Watson real, real quickly. We're looking for a new Deshaun Watson.
Look, the phone is on.
Except okay, Kevin Stefanski.
The phone is on. It's up to him to take advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah, the phone is on. The foot is such. Walt in Burden. What's up, buddy?
How you doing? Hey, you know, you made a statement a couple seconds ago about the Kyle Hamilton dropping that the interception.
Mm-hmm.
I recall seeing on the NFL Network, and I mean, a few months back, it was a historical outlook on the Jets-Browns playoff game that went into a couple overtimes. And they talked to Bernie, and they said, you know, did it concern you that they came close to interceptions? He says, no. He says, if the guys could catch, that would be receivers anyway.
Okay, so that's where the cliche emanates from. I did not know that was Bernie.
Well, yeah. I don't know if anybody said it before Bernie. I mean, like, you know, but that's... That is where I heard it for the first time.
Well, yep. We appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much. Go Browns.
Hey, and go Browns, indeed. Have a good one.
You too. Walt from Burden there, giving us that. Curtis from Cleveland, what you got for us, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
Living the dream. What you got for us?
Okay, so let me tell you. I don't think if you had Joe Montana as your quarterback, when your team is giving up more sacks than any team in the league and dropping more passes than any team in the league, you're not going to win. So we got to stop pointing fingers to Seth Watson and start using common sense, especially when you're making more penalties. The thing that they did is they got rid of the guy that led the league in drop passes, Amari Cooper, and they put a kid out there who can catch the ball. And last week with Watson them, he had almost 90 yards. This week he had 100 yards. They got a guy who can hold on to the ball. This has nothing to do with Deshaun Watson. And people who say that are ignorant. You have an offensive line.
Or they have eyesight.
No, they're ignorant because they had two more offensive line yesterday. Wyatt Teller was back at right guard, and they had Juwan at left tackle, and they also had Nick Chubb. So people who are pointing a finger at Deshaun Watson are just flat-out ignorant. They got a receiver that can catch the ball now.
Curtis.
I'm just giving you numbers.
Yeah, but what you're saying, like, Deshaun couldn't crack 200 yards. Jameis in his first start cracked three.
Amari Cooper dropped 9 passes in 6 games. You want him to be Buzz Bunny and throw the ball and catch it and block for himself?
No, I'd like him. No, see, this is the problem. Curtis, I thank you for the call, buddy. I would like, just to the audience, I'd like you to strike the last 4 minutes of phone calls from the record because they in no way move the conversation forward. That is on me. I take ownership. Curtis, stop. Buddy, I get it. You've held on to hope. You've planted a flag that says, I'm a Watson warrior, and Deshaun will set us free. No, he couldn't set himself free. Deshaun is done in this town. And I don't say that with mirth. I don't say it with excitement. I don't say it with happiness. I mean, the only thing I'm happy about is the Watson wars are done. That has less to do with Deshaun and the toxic environment of where this thing was after 3 years and a situation birthed by the Cleveland Browns themselves. But no, stop. Stop polishing a turd. Deshaun sucked. He won't play here again. If he is here, it's going to be as a third backup quarterback inactive, whatever. Just stop. Because it doesn't matter. Nothing you say is going to talk Deshaun Watson back into the Browns' plans. It's probably best for the Browns. It's certainly probably best for Deshaun. 216-474-0092. We will get the show on track. Next, the question is, how much did yesterday change things for the Browns? Now, while we're in the business here of enjoying Jameis Winston, we got to talk about pre- and post-game Jameis next on 92.3 The Fan. It should be noted, and because I tend to not pay attention to the broadcast crew. I thought the broadcast crew did a really good job yesterday. I really liked McCarthy with Feely and Ross and then Amanda on the sidelines. I remember tweeting out, like, I don't know what that just was from Jameis. It was the first time. I tend to, when I hear stuff like that, I tend to go one of two ways. That this guy is about to have the game, like the game that nobody saw coming, or this guy is about to just go ahead and tank the season entirely. Like, that's what it felt like listening to Jameis. It just felt like it's something. And again, because you win, you get to sell me that he was so locked in, he just locked into the same two things when asked two very different questions. You're not going to get any argument out of me because they won. However, I am a little curious about how that stuff's going to play when if they lose. Again, that, who knows? That could be 5 weeks from now. But I remember just thinking, like, oh, that was different with Jameis. And listen, we're talking about this, and I think this is a real question. Should you keep Jameis post the deadline if all he does is make the offense watchable? Because I think it stands to reason that Jameis should be the better quarterback than DTR. DTR is a fifth-round pick. DTR is a guy who, in the short spurts of football we've seen from him, there's been some good, but by and large, he's looked like a guy who is not prepared to play. And you don't get, like, you don't get the Baltimore game and the Cincinnati game and get a third game where you look surprised that you had to play. Now, to me, I would say that's the coaching staff setting a player up for failure. If that player doesn't understand when somebody says, be ready, that means you might actually have to play this weekend. as opposed to like the general, hey, anything could happen. You never know. But again, I'll digress. Like, I'll put this on the young player. So I'll be honest with you. If tomorrow somebody called and offered you a third round pick for Jameis, you're not going to like my answer. It's still trade Jameis Winston. That one, I don't think that's happening. Two, I think what yesterday allows you with Jameis is to play him until it doesn't look like yesterday looked. So, for instance, I think you're going to be able to live when Jameis plays the way he did yesterday. You can live with one or two picks, right? It's the Joe Flacco principle. You can live with one or two picks depending on the context per game that those are thrown into the mix. What you can't live with is if all of a sudden it's the Kyle Hamilton at the end of the game where you're driving and he just blatantly misses somebody and throws right into the arms of an oncoming defender. And the difference between Joe and Jameis is Joe's picks were usually just arm hubris. They're just a guy who's just a gunslinger, and that's just a stylistic thing you have to live with. With Jameis, there's just times he just doesn't see guys. There's just blatant times where he's a bit of a space cadet. Like, this is, Jameis is, of all the players I've said, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, because I appreciate the change of energy, and I appreciate the change. I appreciate that I'll actually start listening to Browns press conferences expecting to hear something that I'm not expecting. I have to listen to every one of these just to make sure anything gets said, you and I get to talk about it. But now, I get to listen to, like, Jameis pre, post, and midweek interviews with, like, zeal. I'm excited to listen to Browns press conferences because this dude is just of a different stratosphere. He's just of a different mindset. But there is a part of him that's a bit of a Martian. And if that just came out in the post-game or the pre-game or the midweek interviews, it'd be okay. No, this is the closest we are going to have for Manny being Manny. Like, I don't know if you guys remember in the mid-90s, because I sure do, because the great Danny Coughlin said something that I can't say on air at my dad's radio show in Youngstown that was the funniest response to a criticism of Manny Ramirez ever. And I can't share it with you. But let alone that my dad and I talked about it from that moment till the day my dad died. That's how great the late, great Danny Coughlin was. His ability to sum things up. That being said, to bring it all back here, Manny was the perpetual wunderkind of hitting like a three-run home run and then making the dumbest mistake in the field that like a high school player would know not to make. There's going to be some of that with Jameis. But as long as it's entertaining, man, am I up for this ride. Until somebody offers you a third-round pick. Or more. Who knows? Let's get greedy here. 216-474-0092. Should you keep Jameis if he makes the offense watchable? Meaning, let's say you lose to the Chargers this weekend, but it's a lot of fun. Is that enough for you? Josh in a car. What's up, buddy?
Abso-freaking-lutely.
I like that your energy's changed too, Josh.
Nick, I'm telling you, I was listening to Jameis' presser when they asked him about the fans, and I went and bought my wife and I tickets to the game. That's how amped up I got.
Are you going to sell, like, if you bought a couple tickets in a row, if they lost this weekend and Jameis says something just as charming, would you then sell the next tickets?
No.
So you're not on ticket-by-ticket basis. You're all in.
No. I'm actually a season ticket member, but my uncle and I would go on and off, and that was my off week. So I wanted to be there for it.
Very cool, buddy. What you got?
No, I think Jameis, where I'm not saying he is the answer, the short-term answer, but if he keeps running like this, maybe we could find a quarterback like him in the draft or like a Flacco, young Flacco, keep Kevin and ride with this thing. But I actually told Meredith, the guy that called earlier, and he's getting all mad because people are shutting the door on Watson. It's like, I feel like we're in World War II and we just dropped the nuke. And there's still guys fighting on islands saying, like, the war's not over. It's over, dude. It's over. The proof is in the pudding. I wish Watson the best. It's over, man. You had Flacco come in last year. The offense looks totally different. Jameis Winston plays yesterday. Nobody's dropping passes. Everybody's happy. Nobody's shaking their head. The offensive line has something to fight for. Did you hear Kevin Stefanski's interview? He was saying things without saying it. What more do you need?
Josh, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you very much. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? No, it wasn't. And you're going to say, Nick, it's not the Germans. Yes, it's called Animal House. Please watch it if you don't know the reference. Now, that being said, I did want to play a few more things here, including Jameis's post-game Thanksgiving speech.
We fought. We gave everything that we could possibly give. Thank you for the offensive line. Thank you for the defensive line of winning the trenches. And thank you for the Browns fans for coming up and standing up and helping us get a victory here at home.
I'm not wrong. That was like a Thanksgiving speech, right? Like, I want to thank God for the offensive linemen. I want to thank him for the running backs. I'd also like to thank him for that new raise we got. And, of course, thank you that Uncle Joey is out of jail. Now, there's one more. And probably the best thing ever, which is when Jameis post-game, and again, all this sound courtesy of CBS, introduced us to a rising young artist out of the city of Detroit.
It's a white boy from Detroit that I really admire named Eminem. He said, you only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity lasts once in a lifetime. And I know I got a quote, you know, Eminem, he's from Detroit, he's right up the road. But, man, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that the Lord provided me with this opportunity. I'm grateful for my teammates, my coaches, and these amazing fans.
This begs the question. Does Jameis think we don't know who Eminem is? Because anybody else sets it up like that, and you think to yourself, he doesn't think he just discovered Eminem, does he? I'm just saying, with Jameis, it's pretty reasonable that he might think he's about to turn us on to this young upstart rapper out of Detroit named Eminem. Yes, like the candy. Nathan Segura next on 92.3 The Fan.